Welcome to ID the Future. On this episode, Thomas Woodward, host of the radio program The Universe Next Door, speaks with Center for Science and Culture Senior Fellow John West about his book Darwin Day in America and the just-released new and expanded edition of the book.
Welcome to The Universe Next Door, where today we are excited to be talking about a new book in the sense that it is a re-released book with added punch to it and a whole fantastic additional chapter. And the name of the book is Darwin Day in America. Bill, have you celebrated any recent year a Darwin Day in America with your churchgoers?
It's not really one of those red letter days on my calendar. Maybe somewhere behind Arbor Day.
Yes, I think, yeah, or Groundhog Day. Right. I think Groundhog Day just was not too long ago. I don't know how the shadow indicators worked in our particular area, but I know that out in Seattle, where our guest is seated, I imagine they have quite a few shadows in the recent Groundhog Day. How are you, Dr. John West?
I'm doing fine from the rainy Seattle.
Okay. I would imagine Groundhog Day is almost at least a normally a predictable event ahead of the year.
Well, they like to say, we used to have t-shirts around here that said Washington Rain Festival, January 1st to December 31st.
I love it. And you know, the irony is whenever I've been there visiting you tremendous folk at the Discovery Institute, it's always been warm and sunny. I think I'm a good luck charm or something.
Well, actually, you know, the best kept secret is from summer to really through mid-September, we have gorgeous weather.
Well,
so while everyone else is roasting in the 90s, mm-hmm. and, you know, we have 70s, and I mean, it's just very pleasant. We have a very pleasant summer to early fall before the real rain season.
Very good. Well, I think you must be on a retainer from the tourist board or the Chamber of Commerce there. Well, it is a real privilege to have you there in the very high position of the Center for Science and Culture at Discovery Institute, doing so much work in education as to what's going on in the Darwin versus design ideological and even, you might say, scientific/political and down at the root level of policy and lives and health and planning that will impact through laws implemented by Congress and perhaps decrees given by presidential authority. These kinds of Darwin ideas are not just a thing of the intellect, but they're the thing of life and death. And so I appreciate your writing Darwin Day in America. It's the most practical and exciting and readable book I've ever read on Darwinism, bar none. If you want to know about the societal implications, it's mandatory reading and it's exciting reading as well. I can give that little testimonial. But you've now added this amazing chapter. We had a chance to talk about it last week and introduce it, but we were just getting into the meat of some of the most important topics in that added chapter. Would you recap for those who maybe couldn't be with us on our program last week, what is the essence when you say Darwin Day in America, when you wrote this book in the original format, what is Darwin Day in America all about?
Really, it's about how Darwin's theory and other forms of scientific materialism, this idea that we're just nothing more than matter in motion and that science proves that, have been consequential not just for science, but for culture, for how our, you know, economy runs, for criminal justice, whether you believe in people's personal responsibility or not, whether you think they have free will and personal responsibility, for how we understand our sexuality, for how we educate ourselves, and for life and death matters of when both euthanasia, abortion, infanticide, all of these things have been impacted by these scientific ideas. You might say my book is about social Darwinism, the social impact of Darwin's theory, but also more broadly, other claims that were just matter in motion.
Mm. And of course, you know, the implications and the applications and the spiraling out, you might say, of shrapnel almost from an exploding theory kind of impacting lives. It was brought out when you summarized very briefly your whole section on this premature infant study. 1,300 infants were affected. What was going on there?
Well, they were trying to determine the oxygen levels to give premature infants that would best help them. And of course, that's a laudable objective. But mm-hmm. to do that, they basically gave some higher and lower levels of oxygen that killed some of the babies likely and or made them blind. And so it was a dangerous study, and they didn't fully basically tell the parents who were supposedly giving consent about the full dangers. And even worse, they actually changed the oxygen equipment so that we give false readings, so that if nurses and doctors were trying to calibrate if, say, the baby was in distress and were trying to up or lower the oxygen based on their individual needs, that they couldn't do that because the oxygen readings were giving false readings. And again, they didn't tell the parents that they were basically ceding away the right to individualized care to their babies. And one thing I didn't actually mention in any of our previous talks together was one thing that is pushing doing these type of studies is a particular provision of Obamacare.
Wow.
That actually requires a lot of studies on efficacy of care. And again, in theory, that's a good thing. And we want to find scientific basis for that. But you can't do the same things with humans that you can do with guinea pigs.
Right.
And really, the issue here was they were treating these babies like they were guinea pigs. Human infants are unique. They're not guinea pigs. They're not lab rats. And when we start treating them like that, it's a wake-up call.
I see what you wrote in your chapter. Michael Carome, the director of Health Research Group at a nonprofit group, Public Citizen, he, quote, "Parents of the infants who were enrolled in this study were misled about its purpose. They were misled to believe everything being done was in the, quote, standard of care and therefore posed no predictable risk to the babies." And that's unthinkable that a U.S. government agency would have a part in that and then would try to really kind of cover it up.
And this would also show that this is not just a partisan issue. This particular study was actually started under the Bush administration, but then continued and then was defended and is being further defended by Francis Collins in the current administration. But the scientific belief that you could do anything in the name of science, even diminishing human dignity, and not follow basic ethical standards really, unfortunately, spans the political spectrum.
Wow. And then, of course, later there in your book, and we're talking today with Dr. John West of the Discovery Institute about his incredibly important new chapter to the book, which is being released in its fresh, amazingly powerful edition, The Darwin Day in America. Epilogue has a section on evangelizing atheists, and that's atheists who are being, as it were, hepped up into an evangelizing mode. You've introduced to us the story of David, and I don't even know how to pronounce his last name, but he's not too far from you.
Barish.
Yeah. Evolutionary psychologist. How does he kind of greet and maybe even shock students who come into his class?
Yeah, David Barish boasted in the New York Times last year, actually writing on their op-ed pages, about what he calls the talk that he gives to his students each year. And this isn't a talk about sex. It's not a talk about psychology. It's a talk about, as he says, quote, "The more we know of evolution, the more unavoidable is the conclusion that living things, including human beings, are produced by a natural, totally amoral process with no indication of a benevolent, controlling creator," unquote. My undergraduate studies were actually at the University of Washington, and I have to say, as an alumnus, actually David Barish was there, and that was some time ago at that time. He's still spewing his stuff. The fact that my tax dollars are now paying for him to basically propagandize students using tax dollars in this measure, I think, is really concerning. But you have a lot of professors who do that, and so that's why, you're right, I titled that section about the evangelizing atheist. Now, the original book has a section on basically Darwin Day, and that's where it took its name from. And this, though, gives you another idea about what's going on here. This effort to make February 12th each year, which people used to know as Abraham Lincoln's birthday, to celebrate it because it's also Charles Darwin's birthday, if you go to any of those events, they're often planned by atheist groups, free thinkers groups. They often are avowedly anti-religious, and they celebrate really like an atheist holiday, you know, atheist Christmas or something. And sometimes they sing songs to Darwin. I mean, it really is cult-like.
Do they decorate a tree?
I haven't seen one that's decorated a tree yet, but I have seen them. There's actually one group we talk about in the book that does mock gospel concerts on Darwin Day.
Oh my goodness.
With titles like "There Ain't Gonna Be No Judgment Day," "Randomness Is Good Enough for Me," and so they sing in a gospel style these basically atheist lyrics and make fun of gospel songs on Darwin Day. Mm-hmm. And so this tells you something. But what I do in the afterword in the new chapter is say how this has ratcheted up even more than when I wrote about it in the original book. And certainly David Barish is an example of that. Ball State University, you know, if you're listening here today and you're in another part of the country than Seattle, where you might think, well, you know, things they do in Seattle, they don't do in the heartland. Well, at Ball State University, the heartland of Indiana, they've taught an honors course where the sole textbook was an anthology edited by a prominent atheist, which has authors declaring things like, quote, science must destroy religion, unquote.
Wow.
Quote, in another essay, there is no God, no intelligent designer, no higher purpose to our lives, unquote. And another author in this anthology even said that scientists should function as our society's, quote, high priests, unquote.
Mm.
Now, I'm not against kids reading The New Atheist, but the point is this was the only text in this honors course called Dangerous Ideas, where the only ideas you got were from the scientific atheist.
And
that
course,
I have a problem with.
Well, and I was going to say, I have a problem with it too. And of course, it's such an important topic that I want to just extend in our next segment and go a little bit deeper here in this amazing supplemental new chapter that is on top of, this is like the cherry on the top of a very rich sundae of information. So we're going to be right back with Dr. John West, author of Darwin Day in America, after a quick break here on The Universe Next Door. Stay tuned.
You've been listening to Thomas Woodward's interview with John West, author of Darwin Day in America. A brand new second edition of Darwin Day in America has just been released and includes a brand new chapter titled Scientism in the Age of Obama and Beyond. For more information about the book and to order your copy, visit DarwinDayInAmerica.com. That's DarwinDayInAmerica.com. Stay tuned to ID the Future for more with Senior Fellow and author John West on future episodes.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2015. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.